what, since the second half, really, how much they've really struggled.
Mind set.
Charged with finding some stability from this scrum, and he can't find it. That's a mighty shot. A mighty one. Leicester.
The scrum battle resumes now. And a big shot from Brazil. Oh, that's sensational.
Here comes the big Georgian scrum. They're absolutely demolished. The Fiji in front of.
That I continuously try to manage is, and it's something that I can control, and it's not what you know, it's what they can understand, and then they're not going to be open to understanding until they know that you care. So one of the sayings that Buff sort of got me onto, which I've taken on board, and it's really helped me in a work sense, is they don't care what you know until they know that you care. Yeah. And I wasn't always great with that, because there was times where it's not that I didn't care, it was just like I care about the standard, right? So I don't want you, John, to do a poor job, because that's going to affect Peter really badly. So I'm really hard on John, but the reality of it is that's not actually helping Peter, because like I've got to build this bloke up as best as I can. So I've got to connect with him to try and get him, you know, to know that I care, and then try and bring him forward in whatever way that is. And sometimes that was lost on me.
Welcome back to the next episode of The Journey of a Grassroots Rugby Coach. And today, my guest is Cole Mooney. Cole is currently in New Zealand, where he coaches at Pakuranga. But previously, he's coached in Melbourne. He coached at the Gold Coast. He also played ITM Cup, and he played All Ireland One before retiring due to injuries. During our chat, we spoke about creating relationships with players and how we relate to players, finding a common ground in our coaching, creating good habits during training sessions, increasing the capacity and the consciousness of your players around what you need from them, about being vulnerable and uncomfortable with your players. I really enjoyed my chat with Cole. I did coach with Cole for a year while he was in Melbourne. So it was good to reconnect and finally have a chat, which we've been meaning to do for quite some time. As always, pass this on to anyone that you think can benefit from it. Leave us a rating, give us a thumbs up, but most of all, sit back and enjoy my chat with Cole Mooney.
This episode of The Journey of a Grassroots Rugby Coach is brought to you by Bull & Bear Crew. Bull & Bear Crew is a range of men's skincare products. There is face moisturizers, face mist, body wash, beard wash, shave oil, and moisturizer. They come in a 100ml pack, aluminium bottles, so they're safe for traveling. You can use them check-in your baggage. They also come in larger at-home bottles. All bottles are refillable, reusable, and recyclable. You can buy refill pouches to refill bottles you have at home if you don't want to purchase bottles from Bull & Bear Crew. They've just been released. A great product, all natural, or vegan, tested on men, not on animals, all that good stuff. Recyclable, reusable, and refillable. So you can use them over and over and over again. Go to their website, check them out, www.bullandbearcrew.com. Place your order. At the moment, they're only shipping within Australia, but keep your ears and your eyes out to the website. They may be able to extend the shipping at some point in the future. Please enjoy this episode.
All right, so let's make a start, Cole. So just for the people that won't know who you are, who are you, where are you, and what's your involvement in the grassroots game?
Commonly, I'm sort of 40 years old. I finished playing when I was 28. I played sort of some time in Ireland, not at a super high level. It was All Ireland One, and then I played ITM Cup at the time. It was Bunnings Cup now. Bit of Chiefs sort of development before getting into moving over to Queensland. I played some Queensland Cup there. I was playing for what's now Bond Uni. At the time, it was the Gold Coast Breakers. Then moved into some player coaching, moved to Melbourne. Once in Melbourne, I sort of played one more year, did an ACL, and sort of that was the end of the playing side of things. And then from there, I sort of got stuck right into coaching, right away. So I was doing a Colts team in Melbourne, and then I was really lucky. The first representative team that I had was under-16s playing at St. Ignatius. I had Rob Leota in the team, Sione Tupelotu, Jordan Uesi, Josh Coward. Who else was there? There was a few like really decent players in there, and then there's some that have actually fallen away. JP Sowney, who ended up being the Waratahs and New Zealand Colts. So like, it was a pretty good team.
Probably one of the Sayunga brothers.
No, didn't have what did I? No, because RJ would have been, but I think he'd done his knee really badly.
Yeah.
And so he just didn't have that. And then Alex was sort of too young.
Yeah.
And Freddie was too old. So yeah, it was, but that particular team. And then I was doing that with Greg Coward. And then at the time, Matt Tink was the head of sort of pathway and that sort of side of things with the Rebels. And then at the same time, I sort of was working in Clubland, and I was doing some sort of analysis work with the Rebels. It was really laborious stuff, but I got access to sort of John Muggleton and Ben Darwin and Simon Strawn, who now do game line analytics. And Damon Edmonds, who ended up doing sort of with the Wallabies. So I was actually really lucky in hindsight to just be involved and have sort of the time to do that. I got to do a full deep code on Verisco, which was like hell. So it took me 8 hours. I did sort of like the equivalent of like a Rebel Rising, or it was sort of the second tier of the Rebels, and did a full deep code on that on Verisco. And that was like 8 hours that I'll never get back in my life. I think that was probably pretty formative in terms of the way that I sort of viewed things. And I sort of went from there and said, okay, I did the 16s for 1 year. 1 year, and then sort of progressed forward into junior gold for a couple of years. And then an opening popped up with JC, who I know you've sort of interviewed on here. And then did schoolboys with him. And then what that looked like was, the first year I sort of was involved, we once again had a really good team. We had Hunter Paisami, and Team Hinckley, who's playing for Romania in the World Cup. And we did really well. We beat Queensland 1, just lost to New South Wales 2. And then there was a couple of little things that went against us to not get us into the top two. And then off the back of that, I was able to get access because of that success into the performance program sort of thing. So I'd done my level 2, and then did level 3 and 4 off the back of sort of that success. So I was lucky to be that last group that did their level 4 and was did the sort of the whole year course and all that with Grippy and sort of trucked through on that. And then it was basically powerhouse. Did some under-19s with Hendo. So it was Breeny, who does rugby bricks now. And then it was JC was involved, and then COVID sort of hit. And then I ended up over here, being New Zealand. So I head coached Pakuranga last year. And Pakuranga's the biggest club in New Zealand in terms of player numbers. So there's about 60 teams, which is like massive.
That's huge, yeah.
7 full-time sort of staff, including a GM, a director of rugby. And they're constantly, like the Colts team won it this year. The PDs are always in the final, which is PDs Premier Development. And then this year I sort of did the D, and director of rugby, Grant Henson, Buff was the head coach, and sort of trucked through. And we went from eighth last year, and then we finished fifth this year. A couple of games that we could have done a little bit better in. It's been quite a big sort of change, I think, for the club culturally and sort of a number of different ways. And when you're dealing with a big beast like Pakeranga, it's certainly different to dealing with Powerhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, just the sheer weight of numbers would be pretty hard to get my head around that sort of numbers when you're coaching Melbourne, where you've got, you know, a couple of grades and some junior teams. And yeah, no, that's a big step. Thanks, mate. That's really good. So over that journey that you've been coaching, whether it's, you know, junior level or senior level, what's one of the hardships or lessons that you've learned over the time? And the reason I ask this of all the coaches that come on, because we've all had, you know, a shit outcome, shit happens, something bad. Like we've had all those trials as we go through, and a lot of coaches just go, no, that's it. I'm not good enough. I'm crap. And they throw their toys out the cot and they walk away. But the good coaches actually sit back and reflect on that and learn from it. And, you know, how do we improve the team? How do I improve myself? How do I get better from that disappointment that's just happened?
Yeah. So is sort of your question, how have I improved or what have I taken away? Or
yeah, so what was the disappointment and what did you take away from it that younger coaches could look back and, you know, potentially go, oh, something similar like that's happened to me? Or, you know, just because we all have shit happen in our coaching journey.
I think, you know, and look, this is sort of woven into and out of my coaching a fair bit, and actually moving country, it sort of brought it back again, which is a bit of a painful sort of thing. I think there was a time where, so when you're dealing with younger players, it tends to be more coach focused because they're just not at the point where the decision making, everything is just not quite there, so quite directed. So transitioning from sort of those junior gold rep teams, so they're trying to be performance players or a version of, and they actually do what they're told largely. They're used to school teachers telling them what to do and being guided. And then you transition into prems and it's like, okay, well, that's fine. And you're dealing with men who have their own opinions and their own egos and thought processes. And so I suppose the hardest thing for me, and then I had the same here, right? Because I came from an Australian demographic and dealing with people, and in some ways you can be, it is different. Like there are some differences. And sort of adjusting to that. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned that I continuously try to manage is, and it's something that I can control, and it's not what you know, it's what they can understand. And
yeah,
and then that they're not going to be open to understanding until they know that you care. So one of the sayings that Buff sort of got me onto, which I've taken on board, and it's really helped me in a work sense, is they don't care what you know until they know that you care. Yeah. And I wasn't always great with that, because there was times where it's not that I didn't care. It was just like, I care about the standard, right? So I don't want you, John, to do a poor job because that's going to affect Peter really badly. So I'm really hard on John, but the reality of it is that's not actually helping Peter, because like I've got to build this bloke up as best as I can. So I've got to connect with him to try and get him, you know, to know that I care, and then try and bring him forward in whatever way that is. And sometimes that was lost on me. And I get to a position where it's like, okay, he's the issue, not me, but I actually can't control him. All I can control is the way that I'm reacting and what I'm trying to pull out of the player and trying to find a sort of common ground and things like that. And I haven't always been good at that. And it's sort of a constant struggle. And then I think with any relationship, any player, any coach that I've sort of ever dealt with, I'm so much better now. Like, I used to be able to only relate to, say, 20% of players and coaches. And I think that percentages is growing all the time. And I had a really unique experience for me this year in terms of I've got a work team that I deal with, and it's I think it's 16 females and sort of a gay guy. And so I'd drive after dealing with them, okay, and sort of a lot of alpha females and strong businesswomen and pretty cool to deal with. I'd drive basically an hour or 2 hours, depending on traffic, to training, and then I'm dealing with guys that want to smash each other in Pacific Island. And so that ability to relate was, I couldn't have been further apart in terms of the starting point. So I suppose the learning for me was they're not the issue, I'm the issue. And then once you sort of take the ego out of it and go, okay, well, let me start from bottom up. Okay, what common ground can I find? And Cole, are you being a dick? And if you are, own it, and then just acknowledge, and then just try and find common ground. That's probably the key thing that I think that has really helped me whenever I've had issues from a performance perspective. It's always gone back to, what has the player not picked up, or what, and why haven't they picked it up? And it's always been because we just haven't connected properly.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, that's a good point, mate, around those connection to players and, yeah, finding your tribe of players and all that type of stuff. No, that's really good, mate. So I don't know how your club, how you run training sessions at your club, but a lot of the coaches I've been talking to, they'll do like first, second grade, third, fourth, like they split the grades up and then some put them all together. But what would a session look like with you when you've, and if you've got, you know, potentially, you know, a Rob Leota in the group and a guy that's only ever going to be a fourth grader, but he just wants to play with his mates. But he's probably going to be the club president or the major sponsor, but he's just a good rugby person. And you've got to develop both of them so they can be the best version of themselves. But you've got, you know, a potential elite player who's got the skills up here, and you've got this other guy, you know, that couldn't catch a cold in the middle of winter. So we've got to develop him without one of them going, oh, this is crap, I'm out of here, see you later. Because it's a huge issue for coaches, I think, at the grassroots level when you've got that big skill gap between teams.
Yeah. So Pakeranga, we don't have that massive skill gap necessarily.
Yep.
Like when a super player drops down, like we had Tevita Mafaleo drop down last year. We've got guys that are sort of on the verge of Auckland, and we've got guys that are sort of approaching under 19s and stuff. So the gap isn't that disparate.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's disparate, but it's probably more in like physical preparedness and a little bit of mental acuity. But it's not like it is in Melbourne. So I think, like, I absolutely understand what you're saying, though, because I had two guys I was coaching with that both coached ITM Cup and been involved at the sort of the top level. They've literally coached against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
So, but Glenn's a bit different, and he's really good in that space as well. But I think you've got to have an understanding of what the problem statement is. And the problem statement is you've got high performance, high achievers on one side, and then you've got low performance, sort of not performing at the level, but they're wanting different experiences. So one's wanting a high performance experience, one's wanting a social experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's oil and water. Like, they're not going to get the same shit out of the same session.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think the way that works within a session is we do a lot of game-based sort of stuff anyway. And the good players tend to be good at it, and the bad players tend to not be as good at it. But they learn, and so the whole tide sort of lifts. And when you get into things, closed environment, skill work, you know, line out, scrum, things like that, then the coach, that's your opportunity to really intervene and sort of really lift that player up.
Yeah.
So how I would do it, should I be doing it? So Tevita Mafaleo, there's no point putting him against a guy that's just come up from second grade.
Yeah.
Okay. So the best way to do it is I'd probably leverage him as a resource and go, hey, mate, can you actually help here from a coaching perspective? And like, just take an eye. I'll run everything. But like, if you can invest in him, I think he's going to really grow. And so then he becomes invested in that guy's success. And so then you've got your top performer versus your bottom performer. And hopefully that gap starts to close. This guy's got his chest puffed out because all of a sudden a super player's taking an interest in him. And the other guy's quite humble to share his knowledge. And we all know the last step of learning is teaching. So he's going to get something out of it as well. Then I think if you let the social guys lead the social piece and the high performers guide the high performer piece, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think JF used to do it really well. And it actually sort of in a change room setting, I saw him do it at school level. Okay, guys, we're in amber now. So there's a really clear understanding of the state that the changing room was in. Yeah. So green, you can do whatever you want. Red, we're getting really intense with pre-game. And so that's where you run into issues where that experience of social versus high performance can be a bit of an issue. But when it's social time, it's social guys do that. Let them, hey, can you own this part of our culture? And then high performers, hey, can you lead this? So we had that this year where our leaders would come up with a theme for the week and they'd deliver the theme on behalf of the boys to the group. And then on the social side of things, the team needed to do a social night. And so we left that to the more social guys to organize because they both of them were probably not super interested in each other's part in that.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out well. But I think that is the problem statement. But then as a coach, so you've got two ends of it. It's kind of like the Republicans and the Democrats, and all you're fighting for is Ohio, which is the swing state. So if you have a few wins, okay, you can swing it towards performance because all of a sudden there's something to invest in because there's a championship on the go, okay? But if you have a few losses, you got to be really wary that it can swing to social because that is still on the table all the time.
Yeah, the social's always on the table, mate. Yeah.
So there's no point in trying to convince the social guys. You're only fighting for the middle of the bell curve. The social guys are always going to be social. High performance are always going to be high performance. Just try and solve the middle.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Now that's good. And like, I know I've been at clubs and you probably have been too, where you may be the only coach there and you're just trying to make things work. So.
I mean, we all know players. Like, I could give you an example of a player. Blano, he is probably that. But yeah. He can swing either way.
Yeah.
So he is literally the swing state.
Yeah. And every club's got one, I reckon. Every club's got one.
So mate, that's embodied in one player, but there's a whole lot of his mates on both sides. So.
Yeah, no, that's really good, mate. And if we can identify who those swing players are, and push them to which way we want it to go, is often a lot easier than trying to fight against them.
Yeah, well, Powerhouse actually stratified it out. So, like, I actually did a depth chart, and when I did it, I said, okay, here's the tenure. This is the type of player they are. So this is at age level. This is where they look at. From a positional standpoint, this is their upside, this is their downside. And I actually was able to map out pretty accurately where the guys were at, and sort of where their aspirations were. And then if you just do that and stratify it out, you'll have five names on a list. It's like, okay, I need to stay on them. Because if I add those five to those 10 high performers, then I've got 15. And there's a saying from a... I think it was a Canadian volleyball coach, and he said, you can only ever have 1.5 idiots on an island, because if you have two, then there's two of them going, hey, come and join us on Idiot Island. So it's about controlling sort of that middle ground.
Yeah. Now that's some good thought process there, mate. I like that. Nice. So you were saying that a lot of your stuff, a lot of your training sessions are game-based stuff, which is the way everything's getting approached these days. So during a session where you've got your game-based stuff happening, how do you look at your feedback to the players in session? Because, and I know, you know, everyone likes feedback differently and there's all different types to do it, but if you're running a session where they're, you know, you got the game happening, do you stop the game? Do you get, you know, more than one coach involved, and, you know, one coach is giving feedback to maybe the attack and one guy's doing it for the defense? Or how does that in game at training stuff look like?
Yeah. So if I'm doing sort of some D stuff, like we probably didn't get it quite right in terms of the D stuff, because I would run the drill and kind of coach on the run. But then Buff would come in and then you'd do feedback and we'd quickly stop water, switch around.
Yeah.
And my stuff was quite fatiguing. So it was kind of like there wasn't really much point in, like the guys are screwed by the end of big chunks of it. But that was my stuff. But literally every training and every warm up, pre-game, we did what was called habit game. And so it started with one habit. And so it might be double movement on ground for ball place or score the try, you know. And then you would build the habits in. So one of them was catching outside body, so early grab on ball, finishing hands to target, race to brace or race to space for clean. We actually did like a good tackle one where it was like around low chops. So you'd make the touch and then go there. So we'd put these habits in and we'd just layer it on. It was like a CD stacker.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about scoring tries. It wasn't about points in terms of scoring touchdowns or anything like that. It was about retaining possession and continuing to play. And the feedback was given via, you didn't do this, turnover.
Yeah.
So it was really evident. And you'd go massive passages of play by the end of the season where the boys would do the habit game really well. It's like, nah, didn't have two cleaners, turnover. But we'd have two coaches working that across the field. And if we had to split the group up, we'd split the group up. We'd often, I would say, for the second half of the year, I reckon 50% of the time we'd have a local school come in and train with us.
Yeah.
So we had Sacred Heart College come in, who won Auckland 1A. We had Howard come in. We had Pakaranga come in. We had Botany Downs come in because they're in our local sort of community catchment area. And they'd come in and train with us on a Thursday night or a Tuesday night, whatever sort of worked. And so we'd often have these massive sprawling games. We'd have to split the field up and they wouldn't know what they were doing. So once again, it put pressure on our boys to coach them on the run because they wanted to win the habit game.
Yeah.
And habit game is heaps better than doing fitness. So
yeah, boys are going.
But yeah, that's what we called it. We just called it habit game. And it was really obvious, you know, a turnover represented a failure in doing the correct habit. And it really impacted our game in terms of what we wanted to do. I think just the cleanliness around our breakdown and our role clarity and sort of what we're trying to do and that type of thing. And then also, I think it was a good game from the perspective of guys are so obsessed with playing in shape, and this is almost movement away from that. So now just play on top of them. Once we line break, okay, we're just brawling, we're short balled, we're playing on top of them, we're feeding through that same hole support, that type of thing. And so I think that was probably the most important thing in terms of the feedback was just given via turnover.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like you said, that there's that consequence of that's what happens on the weekend if we don't execute this. And, you know, we're not singling people out. We're just turning the ball over because if you turn it over on the weekend, we're now, you know, defending counterattack or whatever that habit or that skill is that we're trying to execute. Now
I potentially have seen it most brutally done, and the guy's done it this whole career, but the Miami Dolphins versus the Patriots yesterday. So this guy, Pop Douglas, turned the ball over because he got run down from the back. So he's from a small college. He's just not used to it. He's really electric. And got chased down, ball got knocked out. Didn't play a single snap after that.
Yeah.
the key skill is retention of ball first and foremost.
Yeah.
Sort of thing in that game. And so that's the consequence that is done at an NFL level. It's like, hey, you're probably our most electric player. If you can't hold the ball, you're no use to us, you don't play anymore. So
Yeah. And it's instant as well. It's that instant feedback that we're not doing this what we need to do. That's good, mate. Thank you for that. Coach development. What do you do around coach development? Like we've got all the coach education stuff that we do, like the level one, level two, level three, level four stuff, which is all important and is that sort of base level stuff. But if that's all you ever do, you're never going to be a good coach, in my opinion. Like there's, you've got to continue to improve yourself as, you know, even as a, you know, level three, level four coach. If you're not developing away from those classroom sessions, you're probably not going to go too far.
Yep. So it's funny actually, because I think like the first thing you sort of want to do is you when you start out as a coach and I'd, you know, you want to learn drills and what needs to go on. And the funniest thing that, so in the last year, right, I've got an exec coach that, you know, I work with. So that's around sort of work and craft is sort of the category I put that in. It's the craft that I get paid for. And then I've also got like another sort of performance coach who's got massive acumen, right? He's trained Olympic athletes. He's trained in the military, anything from like diet to massage to chakra to sales techniques to the whole lot. Like he's just complete growth mentality. And I actually think that those two probably have added to my coaching and augmented like my knowledge so much more. Like, and so when I look at where my focus lies now, like, yes, I read books all the time. Like, yes, I'm listening to podcasts all the time. Like, I'm always trying to pick up different things. Like, I was listening to an Ian Foster one yesterday, and then I went straight from listening to that to like a political one. And then I looked at, just because I knew I was having this conversation, I looked at sort of what the books are that are around me at the moment. I've got a book by Marcus Aurelius called Meditations. I've actually got a book on sort of romance, which was written by like a New York novelist, and but it's more like a study. I've got LeBron's book. I've got another one that's like a Stoic reading. And so those are sort of the books that I've got around me at the moment. So I still do that, but what I try to work on at the moment is increasing capacity. So you probably alluded to it before. We don't have a whole lot of time. So like, what can you do with that time? So I want to increase my capacity, which means reducing the time I spend on other things or increasing my ability on the things that I am working on, and different ways to do that. And then the second part is increase of consciousness. So as my consciousness goes up in terms of better understanding of how people work, emotional intelligence and things like that, it makes me much more effective in dealing with people, which makes me quicker at dealing with people, which once again means I can deal with more people. So that's completely outside of anything coaching wise, but it allows me to have much more effective communication and conversations.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, and there's a few coaches I've spoken to, and a lot of the stuff they do around development is away from, you know, rugby or coaching, but it's just, like you said, just giving you extra skills that you can then layer into what you're doing.
Think part of it as well comes from, like, when you see a coach at super level, at All Black level, or whatever it is, you straight away go, hey, I can use that, or that's relevant, or that's not relevant.
Yeah.
And I just find now so much of it going, hey, that's the thought process behind that's great, but that's not how I'm going to deliver it. Yeah. And that's not who I am. And so it's not, so yes, I can understand that, but this is how it works for me. And having a better understanding of that falls into that consciousness sort of piece. Okay, and then how do you deliver it effectively falls into sort of the capacity piece.
Yeah, and I think too we, like you said, we see other coaches at whatever level it is, and you see them run a drill or, you know, a backline move or whatever. And as young coaches, you go, yep, I'm going to do that on Tuesday night at training. And you get there and it just doesn't work because, A, you might not have the cattle or, you know, it's too advanced for them. But if you can actually look at that and go, like you said, I understand the thought process, but I can't deliver it like that to my boys. I've actually got to change this, this, and this, or I've got to regress it to this skill level to get my boys to do that. I think the more we can look at those.
I'm actually a step further. I'm like, rather than can't do it for these guys this way, it's like, I won't do it this way.
Yeah.
Because that's not me.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it's like, I refuse, like, I can see what you're doing there defensively, and I like that, but I'm not doing it that way because not only is that not me, it's not going to come across as genuine. It's not going to be the most effective way. So the most effective way is my way, which then I've tried and figure that out.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good, mate. I like that. Yeah, like you could put 5, 6, 10 defensive coaches together, and they're all going to have a different system, a different way of doing stuff. You know, yep, I agree with you, but I'm not going to do that. And I think they're conversations that we need to be open to as well. And you know, we don't have to always agree with every coach that we talk to, but understand their thought process or what they're trying to achieve. But you just, you know, like you said, I'm not doing it. I understand what you're trying to do. And I appreciate what you're trying to do, but that's not me. It's not my team's not like that, or for whatever reason. But you take that little bit of, you know, a little bit of gold away from everyone you speak to, and develop it your own way.
Yeah, I think as I've progressed coaching and playing wise, life wise, one of the sayings that comes out to me was, you know, be open to everything and attached to nothing.
Yeah.
And nobody can do that, right?
you can't.
Like, we're not the Dalai Lama, you know. Like, we've got our own egos and biases and stuff like that. But I like to think that I'm a much better soul for going, you know, okay, where does that sit? I'm seeking to understand before seeking to be understood. Like, I'm so much better than that than I was 5 years ago.
Yeah. And I think the more we progress in our journey, the more whatever that skill is that you've got, it develops, and you're more open to have those discussions with people. And, you know, I know when I was, you know, a young coach was like, oh, I'm not going to talk to that bloke because he'll think I'm a dickhead, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now it's what you said. Yep, I can understand that. I can do that, but I'm still going to do it my way. And we're just more confident, I think, as we talk to other coaches, as we get more experience.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. But it's strange because you're more confident being uncomfortable, I think, is the other part.
Yeah.
Which means being vulnerable.
Yeah. So. And the more that you, I don't know about you, but the more that I know about the game, the more I realise I don't know about the game.
Yeah, one of the best sayings I've heard as well was, as the island of your knowledge grows, so too does the shoreline of your ignorance.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that one's quite a big one for me. The more I know, the more I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, too, the point you made there is you're not afraid to be vulnerable and go, hey, I don't know, but let me go and find out for you. Or let's go and work, you know. Because, you know, we go back to some of the stuff we talked about before. We've got the trust from the players or those connections with the players. We're genuine when we go, mate, I don't know, but let's go and work. Let's go and, you know, but I know someone that will know the answer to that, or let's work through it together. And, yeah, it just helps build everything. That's really.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff I was doing defensively this year or trying to in the preseason, I was like, it was some of the worst coaching I've ever done. Like, it was the most challenging, but it was probably the worst.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is not what this should look like.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is great because it's challenging, but this is If it keeps going like this, based on trend, we're looking at a shit show here.
So did it come good in the end, mate, or did you change your defensive pattern?
We altered a couple of things, but the principle stayed the same. We had the best day in the comp.
So, statistically. I think too that comes with that experience of this is what we want to achieve. At the moment, it looks like a shit show. So what do I tweak to make it work? I don't need to knock it down and rebuild it. I might just need to replace a few things or tweak a few things. And that comes back to that being genuine and, you know, doing all that stuff. So
I think as well, we had some new players as well. Each year you get new players. And it's kind of like those players can bring their own weapons to the table and their own strengths. And that kind of, to be honest, we had two or three guys that were just like, they completely changed the way that we're able to defend this year versus last year. And we didn't know those players were going to be there when we came up with the initial, like, this is what we're going to have a crack at. So, and it changed the way we were able to do stuff. And we didn't need to be as drilled in this. We could be a bit flexible here, give the guys some leeway here. And we know these two guys are going to solve for that. So, yeah.
No, that's good, mate. That's really good. So think back to that first year that you were coaching, even as a player coach, what advice would you give yourself if you could go back in time to that first year of coaching, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, okay. I think the first one that I've already mentioned, they don't care what you know until they know that you care. So that's the first thing. The second thing would be coach, and the definition of the words is quite important, but coach the skill, not the drill. And so that's not, so skill is under time and space pressure and execution of a habit. And that's my definition of it. And so that means you don't really want to collect drills, you want to go, what's the skill outcome you want, and then sort of devolve from there. But also, you've got to have a starting point, right? You can't think like that straight away. So I get that. I think the third thing that I would recommend that I actually did quite well and I was really fortunate with, I went to a graduation once, and it was just before like a financial crisis. And they brought in this business lecturer, and he was sort of talking away, and they sort of said, what advice do you have for the graduates? And he sort of went through three or four things. But one of the things that he said was cuddle up to the gray hairs. And what he meant by that is talk to the senior people in whatever organization you go into, because we're about to go through some chaos financially here, and they've seen it before. And I just don't, I think with courses, I think with curriculums, I think with everything that's online, with YouTube, I think with Facebook, Instagram, all of that, what we're not doing is talking to the old blokes that have done it before. And it's not about talking to every old bloke. It's about talking to the ones that have had that unique bit of success in that unique area for a period of time. Because a lot of the stuff that was happening way back is coming back. An example of that, Counties Manukau, back in the 1970s, they used to put a number 8 right out in the back line and have him shoot up from outside in. Okay, it was basically the one of the first versions of a rush defense.
Yeah.
So now that's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And I look at, there's a book by Bill Walsh, which Eddie Jones reckons is like the book. I can't actually remember the name of it. I lent it to a bloke in Melbourne, actually, and I'd like to get it back. And you can't get it. It's in print by Bill Walsh. And he literally, it's this thick, all of the Super Rugby franchises in New Zealand. And it goes down to what to do after a big loss, what to do after a big win. It's just by bullet point. This is what you need to address with the team. And that's all that empirical knowledge is out there. But we're not looking in books. We're not talking to old blokes at the rugby club. We're looking at the new shiny baubles on Instagram and this and that. And I just think that the base of the pyramid is still those big conversations with guys with grey hair. Yeah. And I just don't think we're doing enough of that. And we're sort of looking at the new shiny attack thing, the new shiny D concepts. And all they are is derivatives of the stuff that's come before.
Yeah, because we haven't really created anything new in the last 20 years.
Yeah, well, I think it's improved over time and just different assignments and things like that. And you have to adjust to rule changes and that. But I think the people management piece is also there. Like, I've been lucky. I had a mentor from when I was 13. I met him when I was 13 and played like touch rugby with him. He was an ex-Steeler, Maori All Black. He played rugby league a whole lot. And he was my mentor when I was playing Counties Manukau and coming through academy. When I moved to Queensland, he was a coach of mine and went through. I went down, stayed with him down in the Mount a few weeks ago, and it's just great talking to him.
Yeah.
And then I was really lucky because I coached 7-odd teams with Alice Meacham as well.
Yeah.
It's like there's – and the grounding that I had there in terms of just an understanding of root cause analysis, key factor analysis of why a skill's going wrong, why the team is not going in the direction it needs to, when to prod at something, when to pull back from it. I didn't always get it right because I just didn't quite have the mechanism for judgment yet. But like it's let, but I reckon it honestly, I reckon it leapt forward. I reckon it took years off like of my learning that I needed to get just by talking to blokes that had been there, done it. Rather than just going to, I don't know, a rugby course and listen to a guy who's 23 give you a syllabus.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. And I think too, like the learnings that you get from, even when they have those set courses or seminars, it's the beers afterwards when you're talking to the older coaches or, you know, you can actually then pick your audience as well and just, not necessarily, like you said, listen to that young DO give you a half an hour spiel on something, but pick the guys you want to talk to and have a chat to them over a beer, and because they all like talking about themselves and stuff. You know, we all do. We all like talking about our own things and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, that's really good, mate. That's I'll cuddle up to the grey. I'll have to remember that one. I like that, mate. This has been awesome. I know you're pretty busy at the moment, so I will let you go. Been great chatting to you again, mate. And
good.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
Awesome.
And I sort of really appreciate what you're doing here, Bully. As I said, I think there is a gap, okay, and it's really hard to bridge from sort of grassroots and the challenges that you have dealt with, that I am dealing with, that we're all dealing with, and the step between there and wherever we're going. So I think this is a really important vehicle. So, heads up and well done to you.
Thanks, mate. Really appreciate that. Cool. All right. Thanks, mate.
Yep. Appreciate it, Bully.
Well done, mate. That's a mighty shot. A mighty Mike Lester. A dribble off their own ball. That is monstrous. Extraordinary. 30 metres scrum.